banded together from remote galaxies are 13 of the most sinister villains of all time, the Legion of Doom, dedicated to a single objective, the conquest of the universe. Only one group dares to challenge this intergalactic threat, the Super Friends. Justice League of America versus the Legion of Doom. This is the Challenge of the Super Friends.
And welcome to Comic... excuse me. Welcome. Welcome to Comic Culture on 93.3 CFMU McMaster Radio and podcast at comicbookdaily.com.
Always professional, Walt. Thank you.
We are your hosts. I am Walter Duralia, and I am joined by Chris Owen, who helps me host. Hi,
Chris. Walter, you know what? That was perhaps one of the greatest openings of our stints as radio hosts so far. But you know what? This week we are joined. Actually, you know, it's great that you're able to do that on such a wonderful day. It is Wednesday, and as I was about to say, we are joined by our producer of all people. Mr. Anthony Falcone is here in the studio with us, and he's going to be helping us out and giving us his opinion on comics. And earlier on today, he was actually telling me that he is actually a comic consultant. And I, you know, this is something I did not know. It was part of his repartee of things that he does. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. I think you also misused the word repartee, but that's all right.
That's what I do.
And essentially, you know, when I can't book a better guest, I'm sort of forced to be on the show. Is actually how it sort of works.
You know what? The way I look at it, Chris, when Anthony comes on, it's like you and I did something wrong. It's like, Anthony's coming this week. Oh, crap. What do we do?
It's like being sent to the principal's office.
Yes. Yeah. You have no idea how stressful it is to work for you guys. James and I are under a great deal of stress trying to keep this show afloat.
Steer this ship. Well, you guys are both doing a fantastic job.
Stellar
performance.
Stellar work. All
so, right. Walt, today is Wednesday.
It is
new comic book day.
Yep.
And, you know, let's start talking about new comics this week. And new this week is brought to you by Silver Surfer Boardwax. Whether you're cruising the Crimson Spaceways or catching some gnarly waves, trust your board to Silver Surfer Boardwax.
Excellent, Chris. As you say, it is Wednesday, and I got a couple of really nice ones I want to talk today about. Osborn number one from Marvel hits the stands today. Here's a character, Norman Osborn.
Yes.
He is like the supreme villain in the Marvel universe.
He is now.
All of a sudden.
Yeah, he is now.
And what hit me when I'm reading this bio, this write-up on this thing, this guy is like Lex Luthor.
Well, yeah, he's really become the Lex Luthor of the Marvel series, right? Like he was, he was Green Goblin before, you know, one of Spider-Man's major villains. But now all of a sudden he's turned into this like mega supreme villain that's, he has been appointed the in charge of all these different organizations for Marvel and things like that. Like he's sort of taken on the same role that Luthor did when he became president. Like he has this sort of subsidiary kind of companies and things like that, but yet he's this dastardly villain in the background. Anthony, what do you think about this whole situation?
Yeah, I mean, like Norman Osborn's a pretty interesting character, just the way that Marvel has used him throughout the years, because they started off being, you know, you actually didn't know that he was the Green Goblin, and then when they had the big reveal that he was the Green Goblin, it was, you know, sort of kind of hidden in the background. He was this legitimate businessman for years. They killed him off. They brought him back. When he came back, he was still a legitimate businessman. But then they had a big sort of public outing of Norman Osborn as the Green Goblin. They sent him to jail. Then they allowed him to be in charge of the Thunderbolt team, and then he gained legitimacy and was in charge of S.H.I.E.L.D. and was in charge of Hammer and all these things. Now, like you mentioned, it's just really a rehash of the President Luthor storyline, but he's still a pretty interesting character. Now, this miniseries has him in prison and controlling stuff from prison, but the problem is then essentially they've just made him a Kingpin-like character.
And so, that's right. And that's the end of our show. But thanks a lot for that recap of that character, though. Whew, I can't believe an hour went by already. But hey, thanks a lot for that, Anthony. That's great.
But you're right, Anthony. It's the Kingpin, Luthor, Osborn. It's like you can't. I mean, you just throw. You can make a storyline, and you need a big villain, and you can put any one of those into that spot.
Yeah,
now,
for sure.
Right? It's
for
like
sure.
The prototype. They're all too similar.
They're becoming cookie cutter kind of character villains right now because
There's some reason. For some reason, they've all evolved. They all used to be villains in their own little world,
right?
In their own little section of the universe or section of that the Marvel U or the DC continuity or whatever. And for some reason, their power has just grown and grown and grown to the point where they're like they have no real superpowers, but they're just like better than anybody.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point. Is that it seems like a lot of the more villainous characters are becoming more intellectually villainous. Like, I mean, really, the Joker seems to be like one of the only really big villains out there that is sort of maniacal and not really kind of, or still kind of crazy. With the other ones are like the Joker, Kingpin, like you're not Joker, but like Kingpin and Lex Luthor, like you said.
Well, and I mean, really, right? Like once upon a time, we were worried about the commies, so the villains were all commies, right? Now, who do we hate? We hate Bernie Madoff. So, you know, it's the business. Now he's an evil businessman, right? Like, that's the kinds of things, you know. Oh. But now, this Osborn story is part of the whole big-time storylines for Spider-Man. And, Chris, have you been reading the new Spider-Man Big Time series?
I haven't really read a whole lot of it because, you know, I really wasn't too keen on the recent Spider-Man developments. But as we were talking earlier, the new storyline with Dan Slott and with Humberto Ramos is supposed to be phenomenal, and so I'm going to definitely go and pick that up.
Wow. All right. Well, listen. Osborn number one, as it stands today, so we Spidey fans run. Let's jump over to DC. Batman Incorporated number one, as it stands today, with Grant Morrison writing.
Right. Now, we talked earlier before the show about we seem to have like a love-hate relationship with Grant Morrison. Like, you know, he does do some phenomenal writing. I'm not gonna say that he doesn't, but you know, I'm not so sure if I'm all sold on this whole Batman Incorporated thing. I don't know if I like the idea that now there's supposed to be all these different kinds of Batmen running around and Bruce Wayne's going to be funding the whole thing. Like, I don't know if I'm keen with that.
I mean, it just seems temporary, right? It just seems in 2 years, Bruce Wayne will be the only Batman again.
Right?
Like, this is just the thing they're trying to do, drum up some business.
Now here's something. Like, I don't know if they're kind of foreshadowing what was supposed to be happening in the Kingdom Come storyline. Because remember, in Kingdom Come, Batman had sort of an army of robotic kind of Batman-type characters. Now, maybe this is supposed to be a precursor to something that's going to happen later on in the DC universe, where they're going to say, hey, you know what? It didn't work with actual real men, but maybe it's going to happen with robots. You know, maybe we can do something with that. Like, I don't know. Maybe he's sort of trying to meld that whole Kingdom Come storyline with what he's already done. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
Go ahead. So,
well, I think that the concern that a lot of fans have, and Chris and I talk about this a lot because, you know, Grant Morrison can do some great stuff, and he does some stuff which is just awful, but everybody pretends like it's great because he's Grant Morrison.
Sorry, I was going to say, the one thing that I have to admire about Grant Morrison, but at the same time I don't like, is that he'll go back into the past of old comics and he'll find a panel of something that happened in one panel where Lois Lane was looking at Superman in some sort of funny dress or something like that, and all of a sudden he creates an entire storyline around that, which I think it's great that he can do that, but at the same time you're like, who cares,
right?
Right. But there's also the
Grant Morrison groupies that, well, I remember when RIP was coming out and I attempted to read that. Okay, so by issue, I don't know, 3 or 4, I'm totally lost. Like, I'm totally lost.
Right.
And there's stuff happening. I'm not sure what's happening. And then, you know, the fanboys are coming in and go, oh, with Grant, it'll all come together at the end.
Yeah.
You know, no, well, maybe it's just like really disjointed and not that good. No. It's just, he's weaving some different directions, and it's like you're on LSD or something, and all
yeah,
this.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, I don't know. I mean,
well,
I just,
he really started with that whole kind of idea of, you know, things are going to come into a head at the very end with The Invisibles. When he first wrote The Invisibles, it was one of those books where you're like, man, I don't understand a word this is going on, but. You know, I'll keep with it because I know it's Grant Morrison. And sure enough, by the end, it kind of does make sense. But you know what? I don't know if that's necessarily true with everything that he writes. I think sometimes it is so disjointed, especially if you're a new comic book fan, it's hard to get involved to it in what he's writing. And I don't know. I'm not the fanboy that everybody else seems to slobber over Grant Morrison about.
And disjointed stuff which comes together at the very end isn't good storytelling, and that's not what you want for one of the marquee, you know, guys. Batman's one of the DC's main guys, if not the main guy.
Yeah.
And you can't have somebody picking up a Batman issue and not having any clue what's going on. It doesn't sell books. It turns off readers. And you really, really need to have a very clear storyline. And I think it's pretentious to create these really convoluted stories, which if you don't understand it, well, you just don't get Grant Morrison.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
and the bottom line is there's way more Batman fans out there than there are Grant Morrison fans.
Oh, for sure. Right? For sure.
And DC should note that. All right. Let's jump over to Dark Horse. They have Conan the Cimmerian number 25 coming out today. Saddens me a little bit because it's the last issue of Conan the Cimmerian.
Yeah, I know, Walt, you're a huge Conan fan. But apparently there is good news for Conan fans out there, right? Because you were saying that although there is an ending, there will be a beginning.
Right. Well, I guess what they're doing is they're planning a new series for next spring with King Conan.
Right.
So it's an ongoing monthly with
now.
King
do you
Conan.
Think that's some sort of homage to, you know, the Marvel series in the past? Because there was the regular Conan the Barbarian comic, and then they came out with the King Conan series as well. So do you think this is something that they're kind of saying, hey, you know what? We respect what Marvel did with the character back in the day, and we're just kind of you know, use that same sort of storyline? Or is this something that they're just following based on the character's past in from the novels and the short stories? Like, I don't know. I've never read the short stories, so I can't say this. So right. But I mean, was he crowned king in those short stories, and was all that kind of stuff happening? Or is this something that the Marvel just sort of created that title for?
No. Yes, the stories have him in various stages, and you know, eventually he's the king of Aquilonia, the kingdom. But the thing is Dark Horse could probably have two concurrent titles. But you know, you and I discussed this last week, I think, with how Dark Horse isn't afraid to just abandon a title and then just start up another title. And, you know, and they'll take King Conan somewhere and then they'll abandon it and start something else. They do that with the Star Wars stuff. They do that with Hellboy.
Yep.
There's no with Dark Horse, there's no even, I don't think there's a thought, oh yeah, we just got to keep this going until how long as we can.
Yeah, for sure.
Basically, it's run its course and they're moving on to something else.
Yeah, it seems like Dark Horse really has this sort of feeling where they're going to produce whatever they need to produce in the now, right? Like they're doing what they think is the audience wants right now. They're not really too concerned with, hey, you know what, we don't need to have a whole lot of history saying we have, you know, hundreds of issues behind any particular title. We'll just change the titles and keep on going.
Right, because of the age of Dark Horse, I just don't think that they have a title that they have to respect enough to keep going, or trick the public enough to go back in a numbering system or type of thing. They just don't operate the way that Marvel and DC do, and I think Marvel and DC can operate that way because they have these titles that are, you know, above 500 issues.
Yeah.
So,
but I mean, part of it is the type of character that Conan is works really well for that, right? Like, anyone who's a Conan fan knows Conan's basic storyline, right? So, you know, he starts off as a slave. He becomes this warrior. Eventually, he becomes a king of his own kingdom. And at any point in time, you can have a story, and it can take place any time during Conan's timeline that was about him fighting a wizard or fighting some monsters or meeting some women or whatever. And so you always can have like different storylines going on which still fit within Conan's continuity.
Right, and the great thing about that is that actually respects and honors Robert E. Howard's way that he wrote Conan.
Yeah.
When Robert E. Howard talked about the way he wrote Conan, the stories were not chronologically connected. They're just disjointed.
Yeah.
It was like he said, like he wrote somewhere that it's like you're in a bar telling a story and the next one comes to your mind. Oh, yeah. And then, and it could be, you know, 30 years later or
right,
15
right.
years before, which is great.
Right. Right. Now, what I'm stoked about, though, is that Schwarzenegger can't run for governor again, right? So he's not going to be governor,
oh.
which means he can go back to making movies. And now that he's older, he can do a King Conan.
Yeah,
movie.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, that would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
A nice Conan awesome. 3,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I would love to see that.
Conan the Flabby King.
They can CGI some abs on him, though. They can,
right.
They can take his Mr. Olympia abs and like CGI them
boy.
Back on his flabby, you know, stomach.
I don't know. Listen, if Stallone can get back into shape.
Absolutely. So can
at
he.
At 60 or whatever, so
yeah,
can Arnold.
Absolutely.
All very right. good.
Now, all right, Chris, let's cut industry news off.
All
sorry,
right,
this is not industry
that.
News. Cut new this cut week new this off week. Right now so we can get into industry
and
news.
And we do have a little bit of a musical segue here. This is Iron Man and Black Sabbath.
Back and you're listening to Comic Culture on 93.3 CFMU, McMaster Radio, and podcast at comicbookdaily.com. I thought I'd throw that in because I don't think anybody understood it at the beginning of the show.
You know, I actually remember being kind of disappointed when I first found out that the Iron Man song was not about Iron Man.
Oh, right.
You know, yeah, I remember that. Right. Like, oh, yeah, song actually true. Isn't yeah. about Iron Man. No, that's sort of disappointing. You know?
Well, listen, you know what? It was probably influenced by Iron Man because, what, that's a Sabbath song from, what, 1970-ish?
Oh, for sure. I'm sure that's where they got the sure. idea from.
I'm
right?
sure. Yeah. Right. All right. Anthony, I'm going to let you, because you found this sponsor, we'll let you read our sponsor for Industry News.
All right. Well, Industry News is brought to you by Life Model Decoys. If your life is too busy for one person, or if you need a doppelganger to get out of jury duty, why not purchase a spare LMD at the Shield auction sale? Please note that Life Model Decoys are not anatomically correct.
Wow.
That's good to know.
So I got to ask you this. What's the, like, what do? You email these guys or?
No, I mean, you know, actually surprisingly, a lot of the sponsors contact us now. We
oh, that's excellent.
Do have,
wow.
you know, it's quite well known. People have been sending us, you know, sort of requests for sponsorship. And, you know, as long as the sponsor, you know, the little advert is read clearly and concisely.
They're willing to pay.
They're willing to pay, which normally means we get paid about 10% of the time. So wow, I thank you both for that. That's you know,
Chris, he's going to send us to enunciation school.
Say what?
Enunciation school.
I don't understand what you're talking about.
Right.
You have to enunciate for me,
guys. We're into industry news right now, and I want to start today talking about Pride and Prejudice and zombies.
Oh, right. That was that novel that they kind of reworked, the old classic novel, Pride and Prejudice. And,
yeah, Jane Austen.
And they somehow worked zombies into it.
Right. And now, then did they make a comic book out of it?
They made a book, a novel, right. And then they did Sense and Sensibilities and Sea Monsters.
But what I'm asking is, why are we talking about it on the show then?
Well, no, they have made comics out of Sense and Sensibilities. They've made comics out of
Pride and Prejudice.
Pride and Prejudice. And these things are consumed by the same people right. that are buying comics.
Same fan base.
I would think that, you know, as our producer, you would understand why we're doing these sort of things, seeing as you're the one that told us about this to bring it up.
This one I didn't tell you about.
All right.
Give you free reign, you know.
Every now and then.
Every now and then.
All right. Well, listen, this guy, Mike White, who was a screenwriter for School of Rock, which
yes.
is a cool movie.
Yeah, I like that movie with Jack Black.
He's directing this Pride and Prejudice and
And Sea Monsters.
Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. They're making a flipping feature film.
Yeah.
You know, what bugs me, poor Jane Austen.
Yes.
You know, she wrote this in, you know, 1324 or whatever she wrote.
I think that was the exact
I think so.
She had to wait 700 years for them to make a movie.
Yes.
And this schmuck writes this book a year and a half ago. They make a movie.
Well, you know, maybe she should have involved zombies.
Apparently so.
Yeah, it would have been made a movie a lot sooner.
Apparently so.
That's all I'm saying.
Look, Anthony's looking at me like, what do you mean? Like, I'm telling you that any book, any old classic.
Right.
If you add a zombie to the end of it,
well, it becomes good.
Well, it becomes good.
Like, now, what? Now we had what some, else would you do, Chris?
Well, you know, if I was to make a new type of movie, like take an old meshing it with a classic kind of thing, or like a classic with a new thing, how about Of Mice and X Men?
Oh, nice, yeah. Nice,
of
very,
mice
very good.
And X Men.
Yeah,
of
why not?
Mice
yeah.
and X Men.
I like that, Chris.
You know, the only problem with that is that because Marvel still owns the rights to X Men.
Oh,
you wouldn't
that's
be able to write.
True, that's
you,
true.
You could write it as
well,
fan
hold on.
Fiction.
Disney
though.
Owns Marvel. Disney owns Marvel and Mice.
Yeah.
You know, Mickey.
Hey, there you
Mickey.
Go.
See how it'll go.
Of Mickey right. Mice and X-Men.
Of Mice and X-Men.
It's all
Mickey Mice.
Wow.
Yeah. No. Wow. I mean, but like.
Okay.
You know,
well, hold on. Yeah. What other kind of novels can we make?
Well, I mean, basically, we just need to take an old novel which has, you know, two words joined by an and. Add another and then add some sort of monster. So
right,
how about
right.
Crime and Punishment and Aliens?
There you go. Perfect.
I like
right?
that.
Perfect.
I like that. Hold on. Grape Apes of Wrath.
Grape Ape of Wrath.
By Hanna-Barbera.
I love it.
But Grape Apes of Wrath could be a Hanna-Barbera TV.
It's there. War and Peace and Werewolves.
War and Peace and Werewolves.
Yes, I like that. You know what? And by the way, if anybody's thinking about making any of these novels, this show is copyright with all of our ideas, just to let you know.
That's right.
Helen of Tron.
Nice.
That almost follows the same formula.
Now, is there even a book called Helen of Tron? Helen of Troy?
Well, no, but I'm taking liberties.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Apparently, there was a book called what was it, the Iliad or the Odyssey?
Iliad. Yeah. Yeah.
What was the war? Was it the Odyssey or the Iliad?
The Iliad's the war.
Yeah. Okay, the Iliad's the war. So
by Homer Simpson.
Yes,
by Homer. Yeah, by Homer. Oh man. All right, listen, this is going nowhere. So
okay, let's just back this up a bit.
What interests me is will this work? Will Pride and Prejudice and zombies work as a movie?
Sure, why not? Right, you know what? The zombie franchise, I don't even know if you want to call it a franchise, but the zombie industry, franchise, movement, whatever you want to call it, is so huge that it seems like almost anything that is made of zombies these days it becomes an instant hit.
And women love Jane Austen.
Yes.
So this somehow has become like the best date movie. Oh, Mr. Darcy, could you possibly pass me that axe to cut off the zombie's head? Oh, dear.
I say,
pip, pip. Excellent. Well,
all right, good.
We kid, but we do wish Mike White all the best, and hopefully he'll be on our show one time. We can give him some more ideas for other movies.
Right. All right. Let's move it along. Talk about movies. Wolverine. I was just about to say Werewolf.
Yes.
Wolverine, the sequel, apparently is not a sequel.
No, I was reading that. Darren, and I don't know how to say it. I'm terrible with last names.
Aronofsky.
Aronofsky. Androfsky or something. Darren Aronofsky apparently has said that he does not want to actually make a Wolverine movie sequel. He's making a Wolverine movie with Hugh Jackman, with the character of Wolverine, and all the characters probably that are licensed in the X-Men franchise. However, this is not going to be a sequel in any way to the previous X-Men movies or the previous X-Men Origin Wolverine movie.
Right.
I hope there's ninjas.
You know, there probably will
there
be.
Might be this
there probably
time.
Will
going
be.
He's going to Japan,
yeah.
Isn't it? Right? Isn't that a Japan story?
Because, you know, I don't remember a few years ago, well, must be almost 10 years ago now, Steve Skros did that four-issue, storyline in Wolverine where he just fights 300 ninjas.
It was
fantastic from beginning to end.
Well, and of course, that was even before that. That was Frank Miller did the Wolverine miniseries that had the ninjas involved and had his old love affair with Yukio and in Japan and everything. And
So Darren, if you're listening, because we know you are. Ninjas.
Now, isn't this, though, his move? Isn't this anti-comics? Isn't this like a throwback to comics in the 60s or something like that, where you just make a story about the character and it's done, and there's no little you don't have to wait till after the credits to connect to the next movie? The way they're making all the movies now, they're tying in and tying in and tying in.
Okay.
And this is like him saying, no, it's like James Brown throwing the cape off. You know what I'm saying?
No.
And he's saying, I'm just going to
exactly
make...
like James Brown throwing the cape off.
The way I think what's going to happen, now I could be way off here, is that he is merely doing a relaunch, a reboot of the Wolverine movie franchise. And I'm betting that by the end of the Wolverine, this new Wolverine movie, there will be some sort of Easter egg hidden thing at the end of the credits that will actually say that, hey, you know what, there is going to be a second one coming along. All he's doing is he's going to ignore the previous movies. That's all that's happening.
Oh. All right, well, a lot of Wolverine fans out there will test you on that, Chris. All right, I want to talk about yesterday I was reading on Comic Book Daily. We're talking about Brent Chittenden, who is a blogger on the site, he wrote a thing called Comics on the Boob Tube.
Right, right, right.
And
right.
It was a great blog about what comics would work as TV series.
Yeah, I read the same article, and he was talking about how one of them was Preacher, and one of them was Hellboy, and now I'm being given the list here, even though I actually knew it. Criminal and Jonah Hex.
Right, yeah. And I added into, I thought Runaways would make a great.
Yeah. Now that's being made into a movie, isn't it?
Well, I think they're wrong making it into a movie. I think the whole concept of them kind of always on the run and always lends itself to a continuity, like
the Fugitive or the A Team.
Yeah,
the Fugitive or the A Team, or the Prisoner. No. What's the car kit?
Knight Rider. Knight Rider wasn't on the run though.
I know, but I like that show. It's like Baywatch.
Conan and Knight Rider, ladies and gentlemen. If there's somehow they could have Conan and Knight Rider together, Walt would be a happy man.
Yes, I would.
So Chris, what other comics would you want to see as a TV show?
As an actual TV show, I think a Nick Fury agents, because you know what? There's lots of great spy TV shows out there right now. I mean, The Alias and Chuck and I think it's called Closure or something like that. There's all kinds of.
I'm almost positive Alias and Chuck have not been on TV for several years.
Okay, but they were good shows. Chuck is still on right now. They're still making Chuck series. Right? Our producer is nodding his head.
Our engineer.
Our
producer is arguing with me. Our engineer is.
Despite the fact that you have this vast encyclopedic knowledge of comic books,
yes.
Your grasp of other pop culture is tenuous at
That's
best.
That's not entirely true.
It's not entirely true.
But hey, you know what? Chuck is still going.
Chuck is still
going.
Okay.
And Alias was a great spy TV series. And so I'm saying that a Nick Fury TV show would be great.
But what about the Nick Fury TV movie with Hasselhoff as Nick Fury?
That would be Walt's favorite.
To tie it all together.
That would be Walt's favorite.
Tie it all back together. Yes. A few years ago.
Do you guys need a room?
What?
No, okay.
No, we're good.
Listen, you're right though, and these are all great suggestions. But I thought it'd be great. I'm gonna put you guys in the frying pan here. Is what would make terrible comic book TV shows?
Howard the Duck.
Oh yeah, Howard the Duck. Yeah, that'd be good.
Giant sized man thing.
Yeah,
the TV show.
Giant sized man thing. I think that might get good ratings. Actually, Chris, I don't know.
It's already a show. It's called Hung.
Hey-o.
Now, no, I think that it would probably a pretty rough TV show because PETA would be all over it if they did have a live action Usagi Yojimbo.
Where
they took a bunch of bunnies and like glued some samurai swords to them and poked them in the butt so they'd fight each other, right?
A la Hammy Hamster or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I wonder
how many actual Hammy Hamsters went through during that.
I know. It makes you cry when you think about your childhood.
It really does. Yeah. Okay. Well, Walt, do you have any series, an idea for bad TV series made from comic books?
I'm thinking Betty and Veronica. Wouldn't that be terrible? Betty and Veronica.
I don't know.
We already have that show?
What?
I don't know.
Isn't it already called Desperate Housewives?
Hi-oh! Oh,
okay. Maybe not Betty and Veronica. Oh, Power Girl, the TV show.
There you go.
How's that?
you probably need only a widescreen 3D TV to really get that.
like a 44-inch at least.
Absolutely. Wow.
What about Little Lulu?
Lulu?
You can get a bunch of fat kids and they can talk about, eating lollipops.
Why do you guys be so mean? They're just anorexically challenged.
Yeah. I don't think you can say fat kids on the show.
On the radio?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we can. Can we say?
Well, we think we just did.
You know?
All right. No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think
Chubby Youth.
Chubby Youth.
Can we say that?
How about overweight?
How about the Pepsi generation?
Yes, sure, why not? Anyways, let's this is becoming a bit of a train wreck here, so let's move on. What, anything else for industry news?
Well, Chris, I got lots, Chris. As you know, every week I do surf the net.
Right.
And I look for
the
industry
vast
news.
Internet.
Right. Yeah, and I come up with really,
really
good
stories.
Better
news stories.
Yeah.
Which we can
you
use.
Get Anthony's email and says, guys, talk about this.
Yeah, I know.
And
right?
Then I ignore half of it.
Yeah, well, it's what we do with Anthony.
It's my life.
And then, but usually he's right. And then, but I do find a couple of gems on my own. And I want to talk about remember you and I were talking about the Marvel and DC retracting, pulling back on their cover prices?
Right, right.
And in February, Marvel is launching Silver Surfer miniseries and Hawkeye Blindspot miniseries, both of them being the $2.99 cover.
Cool,
so
cool.
Because as Marvel said, they will not change the $3.99 covers to $2.99.
But
like DC is doing, but anything new,
they're going to lower the price.
They're going to lower the price.
Yeah, which I think is a great idea. You know what? Especially with new titles coming out, like Hawkeye is one of the Avengers, the classic Avenger character, and you know, I'm hoping that he's going to be in the new Avengers movies later on. And so, why not? You know, have a great new comic with them.
I don't. This is where I tend to disagree, and I want to argue this.
Well, hang on one second. Hey, James, is Hawkeye going to be in the new Avengers movie?
Hawkeye is in the new Avengers movie, played by Jeremy Renner.
Thank you very much.
That's good. See,
Chris is in the know.
I'm in the know.
But hold on. So is that why Marvel is putting out a Hawkeye Blindspot 4-part miniseries that they know isn't going to have high sales? Or are they hoping for a nice little $16.99 thin hardcover or softcover that they know will not have high sales?
No, but they're hoping that maybe once the trade paperback is finished and then once the Avengers movie hits, maybe there'll be some Hawkeye fans out there and they'll want to go back.
Some Hawkeye fans?
Yes.
No, I mean, no. I don't know if the numbers for Hawkeye are there to
There's
justify.
Hawkeye fans out there.
Okay, but the economics of putting out comic books, you can't sell 6,000 comic books and make money. Oh. So why is Marvel putting out characters that they know will not carry a title for a long period of time? Why are they doing, you know, this 4-part Hawkeye miniseries that will be forgotten, you know, so quickly?
Maybe Hawkeye is going to be the next character that they're going to try to make big.
I doubt it.
You don't know that. We don't know.
No, I know. No, but I'm looking for answers and that's not the one.
You know, because it might be the right answer.
Oh, all right. Well, Anthony, weigh in.
I mean, like, I think that the sort of mid-tier characters have always had a really strong fan base, right? They haven't had a strong fan base with everybody, right? So Hawkeye will never be a Batman. He'll never be a Spider-Man, right? But he has a big fan following, and it does seem strange to have an Avengers team without Hawkeye on it, right?
Okay.
Like, you know,
okay. What's wrong with keeping Hawkeye as an Avenger and writing him in as an Avenger? Because people love, you know, some of the parts is I don't know what the phrase is,
synergy.
Whatever. Yeah. Why go to try to put Hawkeye solo when 73 abortive attempts beforehand didn't work?
And that's why you have a miniseries, because you get to see a little bit more about the character. It fleshes out the character a little bit more, but they're not committing to an entire series. So the fans of Hawkeye get a little bit more Hawkeye.
So are you
this is a little bone? Is this a bone to fans of Hawkeye?
Hold on. So you're suggesting that maybe they should come up with yet another Spider-Man title so that people can get sick of the character?
No, I'm saying that people will never get sick of the Spider-Man character.
Okay, but so...
And that character can carry his own title, and yeah, okay, they may have 6 or 7 or 8 different titles going on, and that may affect the sales of them, but the point is that Hawkeye cannot carry his own title.
Okay, hold on. Now I'm gonna go against this again. Now, you could have said the same thing about Daredevil. Back before Frank Miller revamped the character, Daredevil was a failing franchise, and they almost canceled the title way back then. But then along comes a really great writer that comes along and does something new with the character that's really great. And why is it not possible that they can do the same thing with Hawkeye?
But Daredevil at least started as his own title, right?
Yes.
Where Hawkeye has never been his own title. Like, Hawkeye has always been a supporting character.
Fair enough.
So it's very hard to bring a supporting character up to premier status, right? I mean, we've seen it with Wolverine. We've seen it with
Punisher,
with Punisher, with Deadpool,
Green Arrow,
right? With Green Arrow, right? No.
Yeah, Green Arrow.
Green Arrow lasted a long time.
Green Arrow counts. Green Arrow counts. Right. And I mean, they've managed to now. It's been almost 10 years that he's at his own title again.
So why can't Hawkeye? So, same kind of character.
One interesting point, though, like, let's take a look at the mathematics of this, right? Because you just mentioned that they're bringing this down to $2.99 an issue.
Yeah.
If this is a 4-part miniseries, that means you can buy the entire story for $12.
Right.
But if the trade isn't going to be sold for $12,
why would you buy the trade?
Why would you buy the trade?
Yes.
Because it used to be that a trade would, like, so say it's a 6-part story, you know, it would be worth. They had, like, say, only 4 or 5 issues, right? So it's kind of like you're getting an issue for free. But if they're reducing the cost of the issues again, and if they're not adding in enough extra content, I don't even know what kind of extra content you'd be willing to pay that much more for, like sketches or extra covers or whatever, right? You know, then suddenly, it used to be that you were, you know, saving money by buying a trade. Now, are you actually paying more to get it collected?
Right. You know, I think that what Marvel's doing is they're just trying to get a widespread audience, a little more visibility to a character that really nobody really cares about enough right now. And I think they're looking towards the future, towards the Avengers movie, and they want people to be aware of who the character is.
You know, I don't think the guys at Marvel are that delusional.
Hawkeye is no Knight Rider, Chris.
You're absolutely right. I don't know what I was thinking.
If you put him in a
car. He's no Hasselhoff.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
Well, it remains to be seen. Same thing with Silver Surfer. So,
No. Okay, you know what? This, I totally disagree with you. Silver Surfer should always have his title.
But nobody buys it.
Okay, but the stuff that Marvel's been doing the last few years with the cosmic superheroes has been fantastic.
You're right.
It's been excellent, excellent stories, excellent, excellent sales.
Requiem did really well.
Yeah.
And the graphic novel continues
to sell. The second series of Silver Surfer did sell for a long, long time. Went on for many, many, like hundreds of issues.
Right. All right. Well, I don't know. I still think there's some other dynamic that we're missing behind this of why they're putting these guys out that they know are destined to fail in a sense. And you're right, Anthony, in the sense, okay, they're going to trump that by just doing a 4-part miniseries. And it could be the hype, you know, to build up for the Avengers movie. It could be to build up, you know, I don't know, Surfer's future involvement with Thor or something like that. But I honestly don't think that they think that these things are going to launch an illustrious career of these characters. I honestly don't.
But I mean, it could be one of those things where if it does hit a certain number of sales, like if it just happens to hit a certain number of sales, then maybe they do try a monthly with it, right? Like, I mean, they might have a formula
for sure. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's you know what? Let's take a little bit of a break from our heated discussion here. And
We come to blows.
Before we come to blows. And let's listen to a little bit of... you know, I know you guys get tired of it, but gosh, I really love the Spider-Man music from the 1960s.
Yeah.
Yes, that of course was the Sherwood High School band doing an old Jethro Tull song.
That's exactly what it was.
All right, Chris, we're going to keep going with industry news, and I want to talk about Brian Michael Bendis and Mark Millar.
Mark Millar, yeah?
Yeah, doing The Death of Spider-Man.
Yes.
Guys, Spider-Man is dying. Help me here.
Yeah, but it's Ultimate Universe Spider-Man.
It's not really real Spider-Man.
Yeah, oh, right? So it's not real Spider-Man?
Well, anybody
so
can...
So it doesn't merit like a black styrofoam, what do you call it?
It's not going to happen like the Death of Superman where it had like the black polybag and like the black armband and you know, 18,000 different covers but you know what it might have? It may just in fact have the Home Shopping Network selling each one of these comics and sort of, you know...
There's still a Home Shopping Network?
Yes, in some sort of acrylic with on sale for like $89.95 or, you know, four easy payments of $20.
Like a wall painting on velvet.
Yes, absolutely. Next to the one you have of the Matador with a bull.
I'm thinking of Elvis.
Oh, right, right. Okay.
Okay. So, what's going to happen to Spider-Man here? Like, does he die really, or is it like a fake die, or clone that dies, or what's going to happen?
I think pretty much all of us sitting around the table right now having read at least one comic in our lives, can say that no, he does not really die.
Nobody really dies in comics. You know what? For a long time, Bucky was never allowed to be brought back, or Robin was never going to be allowed to be brought back, and they've both been brought back since then. So really, there are no issues about bringing any characters.
I understand that, but how does this happen? Why will he die? How will he die? What are they doing to Spider-Man to make him die? To make him better?
Well, Chris, you have a time machine and can go into the future and read the issue. Why don't you tell us about what happened?
Obviously,
we have probably, you know, four of the greatest minds in comics in this room.
Greatest minds.
And
in jars on Chris's shelf.
And, I'm collecting them. Watch out, Gene.
And the viewing public, or what do you call them? The listening public.
Viewing public. Yeah.
They probably wanna hear what we think.
Well,
these guys are up to.
We don't know how far in advance this series is going to take place. This could be a series much like Batman: The Dark Knight Returns, where it's like 50 years in the future. I guess not 50, but you know, it's years in the future. When they're older, it could happen in current continuity. It could happen in some sort of weird time frame. Like, who knows what's going to happen, right? So we can't do this.
You know, in grade 7, I had a science teacher, and the kids, you go, all right, kids, ask me any question. And grade 7 science teacher, and we go, sir, are there life on other planets? And he'd look at us and go, well, we don't know yet. But we're working on it.
Well, that's pretty much the same answer.
Right. Okay.
The last 15 minutes of the show is frequently the weakest.
That's why you're here to correct that.
It's where we run out of gas.
We just fade out. We just kind of lose steam.
Okay. If he actually does die, maybe they'll have somebody else take over the mantle of Spider-Man. Maybe they'll have him fake his death so he can live a normal life as a teenager, right? Maybe that's what the story is going to be all about. Because in the Ultimate Universe, once he hits a certain age, they force him to join the Avengers. Wow. And maybe he doesn't want to do that, right?
It's like Logan's Run.
Exactly.
Right. Wow. Okay. So what you're saying is that they're either going to kill him. He's going to fake his death so he can just live a normal Archie teenage life.
That's right, yeah.
Right. Or they're going to do the Bruce Wayne thing where they get another guy to do Spider-Man.
Yeah, because anybody with like a mask,
or maybe they'll do the, you know, some sort of weird, like, you know, where he has a sidekick or something and get somebody else to be Spider-Man. Like, he trains somebody else, like a Zorro kind of thing.
Wow. Or maybe they'll use like a dimensional portal and get the Spider-Man from the normal Marvel universe to go to the Ultimate Marvel universe.
Or maybe they'll get the zombie Spider-Man to come in and
from the zombie Marvel universe. Yeah, see, Mark Millar, Bendis, are you listening to this? Because this is gold.
This is pure
gold. Jerry, gold.
No, but the thing, though, is that the Ultimate Spider-Man, as Ultimate Spider-Man Volume 1 has sold 1 million copies.
Yes.
A million copies. Yeah. So my argument here, my point I'm trying to make is here, don't mess with you know, don't, well, you know, he's the ultimate Spider-Man. We can do whatever we want. Hey, listen, there's a massive fan base for this thing.
For sure.
Why don't you write
sure.
some flipping good stories for
well,
the kid?
You know what?
And have him, you know.
The series has gone on long enough that they shouldn't be just be flippant with the character.
Right.
They shouldn't just say, well, hey, you know, we can do whatever they want with it because it's only Ultimate. And I will agree with you on that point because, you know what, the series does have a huge fan following. So they have to they do have to take that into consideration.
Right. Well, I'm gonna pick it. I'm going to go and pick it in front of the store or something like that. Don't kill Spider-Man.
I think you should.
I think you definitely should pick it in front of your own store. I think that's something which will really help sales.
Yeah. So. Listen, if the local newscaster, what the heck's this guy doing?
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, all right, Chris, I'm going to end industry news because our producer Anthony has a segment for us at the end of the show, but maybe you can interject with a little music.
Well, I probably could if I had known we were going to do that, but you know what?
That's all right. Why don't you read out the sponsor, Chris?
Oh, I can do that too.
The sponsor for the part that we already did?
No, how about we can do
a different spot. The sponsor for the part we're about to do.
Our next segment is brought to you by the Acme Warehouse. We carry everything from anvils, springs for your shoes, easy to strap on rockets, and more. Our easy to follow instructions make IKEAs look like rocket science. Order your catalog today.
Wow. Excellent, Chris. Now, as you're gloating in your non-mistake delivery, are you queuing up music at all?
Well, I can't do two things at once here. You know, hold on a second here. Let me. I'll find something here for you very quickly. And you know what? Hold on a second. Hold on. Wait. Here we go.
Why don't you draw out and say, "And hold on." And
what I like the most about this show is the constant professionalism.
Yeah. Okay,
is really the big draw for all our
listeners. Driving force. It's what keeps Chris and I going.
It is.
His amazing friends, Iceman and Firestar. Amazing friends.
Chris, I love that. Can you like make me a tape of that or something?
I can make you a tape of that, you know, as in a constant loop. And you know what? I don't even know who actually makes tapes anymore. But you know what? I know I can try to get an 8-track for you too if you want.
No, my dad could use the 8-track, but I'm okay with tapes.
All right.
All right, so guys, as per usual, we do get a lot of letters and emails for you guys.
Letters? People actually write letters?
Oh, yeah.
With stamps on them?
Yes, with stamps on them. Send them to us.
Where do they send them?
They send them directly to CFMU.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, no. Snail mail is still live in Hamilton.
All right.
So I decided to pick out a couple for you guys.
Okay.
So, dear Chris.
Oh, here we go.
I recently read your article on Comic Book Daily about movies.
Yes.
Because for those of you who don't know, Chris does write also for Comic Book Daily. Check out Chris's blog, ARG,
at comicbookdaily.com. ARG.
And Roger from Thunder Bay, Ontario, would like to know, what is your favorite comic book movie?
My favorite comic book movie. I would still have to say the original Superman.
Very good.
From Christopher Reeve Superman. I think that's it was you know, for even though it's a little dated now, I think it still had all the values and it was done well enough that it still brought the character to life.
Walt, what about you? Favorite comic book movie?
Raj, thanks for the email. I mean letter. I don't know.
Conan, perhaps?
Conan. Thanks,
yeah,
Chris.
Yeah.
The first Conan, the first half of the first Conan.
Well,
I
only
enjoyed.
The first half?
Yeah, the first half. And then I didn't enjoy the second half as much.
What's...
But for some reason, I enjoyed Arnold being, you know, chained to something.
You know what?
I'm not sure what that means.
I am not going there whatsoever. I am going to ask Anthony and James, our engineer here, what are their favorite comic book movies?
You know, I would actually agree with you. It's the first Superman, right? You know, I mean, like it was. It's so simplistic in so many ways, but just like the tagline, "This summer you will believe a man can fly."
Yeah,
like
for
it's
sure.
just,
yeah.
it's a fantastic story. Yeah. Even after all these years, Gene Hackman's a great Lex Luthor,
yeah.
and it just, you know, it goes to show you don't need a ton of special effects to pull off a great comic
yeah,
movie.
For sure, I agree.
I'm going to go with the other end of the spectrum, and I'm going to have to say 300.
Oh.
Interesting. Wow. Very interesting choice.
Wow.
Of course, that was a good movie.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed that movie. Yeah.
A lot of sweaty, oiled-up men.
Now, Anthony, why do you got to be like that? Why can't he enjoy it for its historical perspective?
he could enjoy it for that. All right. So let's move on to another email. Dear Walt and Chris, I really enjoy listening to your show. I listen every week. Do you guys have any other hobbies besides comic books? And this is from Laura in Sudbury, Ontario.
Walter, go ahead.
Well, Laura, thanks for emailing or writing a letter. Yeah, I have many hobbies. I enjoy stamp collecting and coin collecting. And in the summer, I do collect butterflies. And it's something about collecting.
This was a serious question from this poor person.
Was it? But I'm trying to say, I collect. I like collecting. I collect. That is a hobby. I run, or I don't even run the store. But the business part of the comic store is one thing. But personally, I enjoy collecting.
What our fans don't know is that Walt actually collects romance comics.
Yes, I do. I collect romance comics, and I collect original art from romance comics. And I really, really enjoy collecting. I don't know. It's something about owning something that somebody else doesn't have. And with art, you can do that as opposed to collecting comics. It's different because, you know, you own a Fantastic Four number one. Somebody else may own a Fantastic Four number one, whereas you own an original piece of art. Nobody else does own that one. So I do enjoy collecting original artwork.
Very good. Chris?
I have to add with that. I actually also do collect original artwork. If you ever came to my home, you would see that there's all kinds of original artwork over the walls and things like that. And I still enjoy collecting comics. And as a hobby, I like to I like to run and play tennis in the summertime.
Wow.
Wow, very good.
So you know what?
It shows.
Oh, thank you. I've been working out.
Wow. All right. And just to finish off, Dave from Timmins, Ontario wants to know from you guys, who is your favorite artist?
You know, that's an excellent question, and I would have to say Adam Hughes is my favorite artist. I've actually been
Wow, why didn't you just say Frank Cho?
Oh, hey, Frank Cho is a great artist too. You know, here, our producer doesn't really like these two artists, and
no,
I don't really
it's
understand
not that.
Why.
It's just anything about boobs. Chris is all over it, like a
that's
fat
not,
kid on a
no,
smarty.
No,
like,
no,
it's just,
you know what? That's not entirely true.
It's hard to draw boobs, first of all.
I've been a fan.
I'm trying right now. It is so difficult.
First of all, I've been a fan of Adam Hughes back when he was doing Justice League America way back. Or I think it was Justice League International back then. So I've been a fan for a long, long time. And I was actually reading Liberty Meadows back when Frank Cho was doing that. So I thought it was a funny cartoon long before the whole boob thing ever happened. So,
very good. Yes. What about you, Walt?
Well, you know what? I'll say that to me, like, every comic artist really is talented. Like, I can't do what they do.
That's not true.
No, okay. Well, okay.
Continue
on. To me. But I personally like Tom Sutton because I collect his artwork. Okay, Tom Sutton was a good, you know, he wasn't super famous. He drew in the late 60s, 70s, 60s, 70s for sure. He did a lot of the a lot of work for Charlton. He did the covers I collect, the painted romance covers. Most of them are Tom Sutton work. And it's just the boldness and the loudness and the, I don't know, the... there's something about the carefreeness of his work that I like.
Awesome, awesome. Well, you know what? Unfortunately, we are running out of time, but if you do have any comments or questions like our previous people were writing to us about, please email us at walt@bigbycomics.com or chris.owen@mohawkcollege.ca, and we'd be more than happy to respond to you and get back to you. But please go out and support your local comic book store and try something new. We do want to thank Anthony and, of course, our usual engineer, James, for being here. Thanks a lot, and have yourself a great day.
All right. See everyone next week.